Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Port of Harlem Talk Radio, and I'm your host and also publisher of Port of Harlem Magazine at portofharlem.net. If you're listening via the internet, you can type your questions in the comment box. You can also call to listen by dialing on your phone at 516-531-9540. And if you want to also ask a question, after you are connected, press 1 and please be in a quiet place. You can also visit portofharlem.net and click Port of Harlem Talk Radio from the menu to hear this and past episodes. We're also available on about 7 different podcast platforms. And lastly, We Talk Productions sponsors Port of Harlem Talk Radio. Our guests today are Bear Mack and Tyrone Habor. Director Bear Mack is best known as the publisher of the 1990s, early 2000s urban website Hot104.com and is a member of the Association for the Study of African American Life and History, also known by ASALA, or as ASALA, the Middle Tennessee State University journalism major, currently lives in Louisville. Tyrone Habor, he'll be on with us later, has been a guest on our show. As you may recall, he is the historian curator of the Robbins History Museum, and he will join us during the last 15 minutes of the conversation. Hello, Bear. How is today going?
Excellent. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone.
Yeah, likewise to you, too. So let's talk about your film, and I'm so glad that I stumbled upon it, because lots of times as a media outlet, we get a request to cover things, but this was one film in which we happened to see and was interested in and gravitated to. So my first question to you is, what inspired or motivated you to conduct the research to create this broad and quite detailed story on the rise and the fall of the black hair care industry in the United States?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me, and thanks for, you know, just the kind review and everything like that, thorough. I'm glad, just very pleased that you were able to share it with your audience. The story of how I came up with this kind of goes back. So you bear with me. It won't take that long. I won't draw it that long. But it starts with a book.
Go ahead, because I'm very interested to know how did you get interested in this. Go ahead.
Okay. It starts with a book that I read called Succeeding Against the Odds, the autobiography of John Harold Johnson, the founder of the Johnson Publishing Company, publishers of Ebony, Jet, producers of Fashion Fair, and various other business enterprises, with Ebony and Jet, of course, he's most known for. And in the course of reading his autobiography, he had mentioned about his mentor. The only job he had ever had was for a gentleman by the name of Harry H. Pace. And Harry H. Pace was a young man who owned the Supreme Life Insurance Company in Chicago, a black-owned life insurance company. Mr. Johnson worked there. The only job he ever had, he was kind of a runner for Mr. Pace. Mr. Pace could have passed for white. He was so high, you know, a high yellow and everything like this. And later in life, he was accused of this and things. But early on, he would have Mr. Johnson, one of his jobs was to go out and to collect all of the news from all of the Negro weeklies, all of the Negro newspapers, and to create a small digest, a written digest of the most important issues that we're facing as deemed by the Negro weeklies that were being covered, the most important issues that were facing the African-American community as such at that time. And from this, doing this task, this regular task, grew the idea for Negro Digest, which was Mr. Johnson's first publication and a precursor to
Jet.
Ebony and Jet.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So now with that, in the course of the book discussing his mentor, he just offhandedly says, Mr. Johnson offhandedly says, that it was a shame that Mr. Pace had, I'm paraphrasing now, basically that it was a shame that Mr. Pace had passed somewhat from memory. Because he had done, Harry Pace had also, in addition to the Supreme Liberty, Supreme Life Insurance Company, he was the founder of the first Black-owned record label, which is Black Swan. Which his partners in that, were included W.C. Handy and W. Du Bois.
Get out of here. Okay.
So all of that in there, so all of this was very shocking to me. All of, as I started to look up, he says Harry H. Pace. So I looked up Harry H. Pace, all of this other stuff. And then I started finding other people who were Mr. Pace's contemporaries that stood out during this time. During this time, of course, a little bit before Mr. Johnson steps on the scene, but Mr. Pace and his contemporaries before that, during this nadir of race relations in America, I found all these people, and amongst these people were, in addition to Mr. Pace, it was people like Frederick Patterson, who had a car company in 1915, handed down a carriage company, handed down to him from his father.
We just did a story on that too.
Yes. I came up with all these people. Yes, the Greenfield Patterson and everything. And I was fascinated by all of these people that, just by looking at one person, opened up all of these people. And I was going to do something called Black Steel, a documentary. And it was going to be about, Black entrepreneurs and people like that who succeeded in the face of Jim Crow and other types of things. And so I had a bunch of things stewing in my mind. And one of the other characters who came across, during my research was a gentleman named Oscar Michaud. And I read his book, an autobiography by Patrick McGilligan, and I was just blown away by Michaud, and then saying, man, what can I do to tell this story about all these people, these Black people during this time? And I figured Michaud had the most far-reaching story that could, I guess, touch the most people across racial boundaries and things. Because here he is, making movies all of this time ago on his own with his own money. And, his story was fascinating, even without the movies, life had been fascinating, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Let me fast forward you on this, and that you were reading the book and you read all these stories about people you hadn't heard of. And I think one of the things you said is Johnson said that he was saddened by the fact that Harry S. Pace had faded into history. What made you go from that reading that book to doing this story on the Black hair care industry? Was there one thing in particular?
No, it goes to the Oscar Michaud because that's my first documentary.
Okay,
I had never done a documentary. I had retired from the music business.
Okay,
and I was just hanging around not doing anything. And I was doing some reading, and so I hadn't trained in filmmaking or anything like that. This was a hobby for me. This was something that I was doing on the side in my spare time. And so Oscar Michaud led me into documentaries, and so it was and we started doing all of these shorts on YouTube on these people, and then these shorts that is called Profiles of African American Success, 2 to 4 minutes a piece. We covered some of the other people that I didn't cover in a feature documentary, where people like the Chicago Defender founder and people of that nature, little shorts, and including Mr. George Johnson. We did a 2-minute thing on that as far as Johnson Products. We did something on Miss America. So we had all these loose pieces. And so I had been touching on various aspects of the beauty industry and people who were covered in No Lie. And then eventually I just kind of like merged all those things together and did a big, long, drawn out documentary. But no, it is. It's actually this is like 6 years. It's all coming. If people have been following for 6 years for the ups from the shorts and the feature documentaries, it was all leading to this. But it all still, like you see, when you see No Lie, really the backbone, if you want to say, of the story, of the personal backbone of the story, especially the second half of the story, is John H. Johnson. So that's where you see it coming full circle today. It started with Mr. Johnson, and this film continues that.
Okay, so this wasn't something that you did in one sitting. This has been a project for many, many years, and many other smaller projects took place before you did this larger project.
Yes, absolutely. It is. It really, it truly is. You know,
Now that you tell me that, it makes me better appreciate the movie because I can see that because you had so much detail. And such a variety of detail that I can see where you must have done this over a period of time.
Yes. It's just been like, because I've had access, I was already using, I just had so much material that, you know, that won't fit into like shorts and things of that nature. We had done something on AKA, it was already there, most of this. But I hadn't fashioned it into a narrative, so to speak.
Right. So I know you're based in Louisville, which is not necessarily the research capital of the world. So where and how did you conduct your research?
Oh, like I said, once I'd done Oscar Michaud, and things had changed then. When I did Oscar Michaud, I relied on the database. You know, like I said, I used the Library of Congress and things of that nature. I had to, to get music and things of that nature and photos where I could find them and things that I could not find. I had, I hired artists to recreate those things. Now, and during the course of the research for the Czar of Black Hollywood, at that time, the Black newspapers, the older Black newspapers, their archives were on a service called ProQuest and stuff like that. You could actually go look up an article and maybe pay $2 and stuff for it. Since I put out the Czar of Black Hollywood, you can no longer do that.
Okay.
When we released, we debuted the Czar of Black Hollywood in Memphis at the 99th annual Stala convention. And I impressed upon the people assembled there that day that I could not have made that movie without access to those archives. Today, you do not have access to those archives now.
And do
you
know
have,
why,
they are, I have
you know
no
why
idea.
Okay.
I have a whole bunch of unsubstantiated beliefs as to why that is.
Okay. So when you did your Library of Congress research, did you have to come to D.C. or did
you do
that online?
Everything is online. Everything's online. I've been virtual for, like I said, I started, our record label, Blockstars Music, was a virtual label.
Okay.
Yeah, so we've been in the virtual world, operating and like I've been making, like I tell people, I've been making money in my underwear since 1998.
That's an interesting way of putting it.
That's it. That's what I've told people. I told people I did Oscar Michaud. When I went to Cleveland, I said, listen, y'all, I said, I did Oscar Michaud. I said, I did this all Black Hollywood in my underwear. And my point of telling them that was that there's just no excuses. You understand what I'm saying? And, you know, and like I said, I told them I had spent $18,000. They looked at me like I said $100,000. Hell, I didn't spend it all at once.
Yeah, I got your message. Your message came loud and clear. But let me move on to Marsha Ann Gillespie. How did you come upon the Marsha Ann Gillespie clip? But first, can you explain she was? But first, can you explain who she was at the time and her point?
Well, that portion came through the, like I said, still the archives, finding, looking through the archives. But with that, Edward Lewis's book, Last Man Standing, The Man from Essence, that's Edward Lewis is one of the four co-founders of Essence Communication. And he had mentioned her only in passing. You know, like I said, the same way as Mr. Johnson had mentioned Harry H. Space, only in passing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I just did my due diligence because she was the original editor in, that they had hired, because it's four gentlemen who were actually running owning it. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was just interesting as to her approach, how that approach was received by the public, and how they moved on, how they came up with it. So I just wanted to, I was just interested in, I at least wanted to get a visual of her, because she marks a decided difference in the way Essence was and the way Essence would be under Susan Taylor.
Exactly.
And the thing about it is, even then, and I don't make any really type of, I try not to make any type of determination of my own, or kind of, as far as which one is, it works for you, you dig? It's kind of like, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, one of the things I try to do when I try to, with these documentaries, is to try to eschew talking heads, understand, is because I want people to be in the time and in the place.
Exactly.
And if you're in the time and in the place as much as I can humanly possible, try to get the audience there and keep them in a time and a place and in a mood and an understanding of the time and place, then Marsha Gillespie makes a lot more sense. You understand what I'm saying? At the time that she comes in. And it was, so she's more than anything, she symbolizes, ideal versus commerce. The realities of the marketplace is what we say in there and things like that. And she's just one of those things. She's one of those
And what's the phrase you said? I have to write that down. Economy versus what?
Realities of the marketplace.
Yeah, exactly.
The realities of the market. Yeah, she represents the ideal. She represents, what they wanted Essence supposed to be, I guess.
Exactly.
As far as the militant times in which it was hatched.
Okay, so we established that she was, that there were four owners of Essence, they're all males, and she was a female editor. And so can you now explain what clip you put in your movie and what her point was with that clip?
That was, I think that, I, if I'm not mistaken, I probably got that from either C-SPAN or maybe the Boston, WGBH. I'm probably tearing up their call letters or whatever, but Boston,
okay.
Public or whatever and stuff like that. And that was, it just happened to be a round table discussion. Those things happen when I do these things, man, to be honest with you. I'm not trying to get too ethereal with you people here. But no, I'm serious. Like I said, with Oscar Michaud, it happened, like I said, and I've almost
But before you go too far, can you remember what her point was so you can share with the audience? Because everybody hasn't seen
it. No, I do not. That's what I say. I really do not. I really do
okay.
not. Like I said, I think it was just if I'm not mistaken, I just think that it was around a panel discussion of African American women, if I recall, because I went through so many clips, and that's the only clip I had, and that's the only clip I really could find of her.
Well, I hate to tell you that I don't remember exactly what you said either, and I meant to go back and look at the film. But I think it's what you said that was around the difference between reality and the marketplace, because it hit home to me that it was the clip that hit the hardest in my heart. And I wasn't it because it was her image or because of what she said in the film or what I remember her saying. And particularly, I remember her saying at Iowa State University back in 1980. And at that time, she was either the post editor or the editor. But what she had said then that stayed with me to this day was that and this is going back to your phraseology, reality versus marketplace, and that in reality, I mean, I should say reality, what she wanted to do was to make Essence more, I won't say militant, but more substantive. Mm-hmm. She wanted to be mm-hmm. more about economics, progress, how to do better, things of that nature. But the advertisers ran away. But yeah. when she became more of a lifestyle magazine about, you know, how to get a man, how to keep a man, how to do your hair, how to keep your hair, the marketplace responded. And Essence became more of what we know it is today, or what we knew it was. And that hit home to me, because that's pretty much the story that even John Johnson tells you. You know, people criticize yeah. him for having the woman in the centerfold, or having sometimes very sensational stories, especially in the early Ebonies. But you know, that's what people bought.
It is tough. It is, you know, Marsha. Look, like I said, I chose the clip because I don't know what she was saying, but she was saying it with severity.
You know what? That's all I can remember, too.
Yeah. Can you dig it? You know what I'm saying? So I just figure I put her on in now, because whatever she's saying, she meant it.
Exactly. That's all. I'm gonna beg you to give me another access so I can go back and look at that clip. Because whatever it was,
I'm gonna find it. I'm gonna look when we jump off. I'm gonna find it and send it to you. You go also because now you got me wondering what she's saying.
Well, see, I remember what she said 30 years ago when I was sitting in the audience, and I was thinking, what? And it hit me with a ton of bricks. And I know there were other people who said it before her and after her. And I wasn't even a person who even looked at Essence then. I mean, Essence was just something. But yep. the thought process has just stayed with me. And, you know, there's been others who have said the exact same thing. And I was thinking another person who has said the same thing. But I'll just say very recently, I had a reader who I liked wonderfully. But she even wrote me and asked, why did we put something up that she considered to be yellow journalism? And I had to explain mm-hmm. to her, first of all, it wasn't yellow journalism, because you can see how people reacted to it on Facebook. They came up with some thoughtful mm-hmm. responses. And number two, I knew it was a lighthearted piece. But the thing is, if we put everything in the magazine or on Port of Harlem Talk Radio that was, you know, about economics, about how to increase your wealth, we know we will have no readers. Because sure. we can see on Facebook what people like and what they share.
It is tough because what you know, and I'm not putting anybody out there, but I'll just use this as a you know as an example. It continues, especially for publishers like yourself, and other people, other content creators and stuff. It is, and when we talk about, because the end of the film is the sad part when you were talking, you know, no, what you said resonated with me about not seeing that red, green and black flag, you know, the flag, you know, but see, here's the deal. We're still in that same kind of struggle. The situation, so we don't have those things. They're going there. And I told, when I was on with the people and I was on with the Portland Film Festival discussing why, and the question was, well, where do we go from here? How do we go forward? Right. Cause every, you know, and I said, I don't know that we will ever get back to there. And as far as these big monolithic, all encompassing black conglomerates like the Johnson Publishing Company, BET, Black Entertainment Television, things of this nature. And I said, and I'm not sure we need to. I said, because perhaps if we had more competition back then, we'd have something right now. So, and my point of that is, a lot of times, and Mr. Johnson had to deal with this, and then when I say Mr. Johnson, I mean John Johnson, and then Mr. Robert Johnson had to deal with this with BET, is being everything to everybody in the black community with one platform.
Mm-hmm.
Ebony was trying to be everything. You would have half-naked women, one page next to something about Jesus Christ selling spoons for the church drive. You know, so
I mean, you know how it was. That's how it was,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
you know, it'd be right there.
You gave a good example.
Man, you know how it was in Ebony and Jet. You know, well, not necessarily Ebony, but Jet for sure. You know,
no, no,
you know, you jump from one page.
No. Ebony was the same way. We have a whole story of a guy who, when I first started writing, there's a guy named Jim Byers who's very much into doing what you were doing now. And he the one that hit me on to going back to these old to the archives and look at old Ebony's.
Yeah.
And I was just
yes.
amazed on how sensational it was. And they did what you pretty much said. So it's real document. Now, I think we still have a story on our website at portofharlem.net, and it's under Ebony, and it's written by Jim Byers. I think it's maybe still be there. But the people, but the other articles that are referred to that's also on our website is the article called No Lie. And the name of your film, I forgot off the top of my head, but
An American Beauty Story.
Yeah, and in that article, I mentioned how the end story, how it affects me personally, is that every time I'm driving from downtown Chicago to Gary, you go down the Dan Ryan Expressway. That's one way to get to Gary. And on the right-hand side was the Johnson Products Company, and I could always count on seeing a large red, black, and green flag there, and it was like being in heaven. And that flag is no longer there.
Man.
So that's a visible reminder of what is going.
Yeah. Wow. It is.
Visible reminder.
And when you talk about the sensation, it goes all the way back to the birth of the black press. Like I said, when I was telling them about, at the Asala convention about how those archives, that how I was able to go to the Afro-American archives, go to the Chicago Defender archives, the Pittsburgh Courier archives. And what I told them then, reading through those news stories from over 100 years ago, I said, that stuff was live, is what I told them. I said, y'all would not believe how they – I said, you would not believe how that – it is – I said, do yourself a favor. Take some time and read the archives of your people. It is amazing. They had to sell papers, Wayne. They had to sell newspapers. It was the wildest stuff way before Ebony and Jet. So Mr. Johnson was just picking up on a tradition. So it's always been that. But it is a tough thing, and BET totally struggled with this. It's to this day.
But it was nothing.
You know, Let me ask you more about
I said the Gillespie piece. The Gillespie piece hit my heart the most, as I mentioned before. How there were three inclusions on S.B. Fuller.
Yeah.
Which was a great surprise to me because just in our past issue, I was talking with Tyrone Haymore, who's going to be on later, and he's hoping to turn S.B. Fuller's home into a mansion. And he brought me up to speed on his story. Like I said, Haymore will join us in 15 minutes. But for now, please share with our audience who he was and your first thoughts on when you learned his story.
Once again, just S.B. Fuller. He is, S.B. Fuller, he is a man, he's a black man born in Louisiana. And they migrated upwards to Memphis. He was a grave digger for a while, eventually ended up in Chicago by the route of migration, like other people. Came there with 25, with 25 cents, he bought some soap. He bought some box of soap. He sold it. Then he bought another box. And he kept buying boxes of soap, and eventually he bought the soap company. And that man, it's hard to even, because like I said, when I encountered him, Wayne, my first thing was like some of these other people was, how come I had never heard of him before?
Okay.
How does a man like this fade, just like Mr. Johnson has said? How does a man
about,
like this fade?
Like Mr. Johnson said
from
about,
the history?
About Harry Pace, you mean?
Yeah. Like he said about Harry Pace, a man like this. I said, how can this man fade? This is what I said about Oscar Michaud. I said, how are people not even, how do y'all not know about Oscar? Oscar Michaud was famous, and the same thing with S.B. Fuller. S.B. Fuller wasn't just, S.B. Fuller was a titan. He was a boss of bosses. He was the richest, arguably the richest black man in America. You know, when I put the piece in there about Martin Luther King, you know, I said, I can only imagine what Martin Luther King must have thought when S.B. Fuller suggested he buy Buck on that. I'm just, you know what I'm saying? I can only imagine what he thought, man. It's like, are you serious?
But you know, Bear, I hear you, but Bear, we never hear that story when we see these stories during Black History Month or any other month about Martin Luther King.
Nope.
We don't hear that story.
Nope. You don't hear the story of Martin Luther King going to Chicago and getting a tour of the of George Johnson giving Martin Luther King a tour of the Johnson Products Company facilities in Chicago. And
yeah, I didn't know that.
Martin Luther King. Did you hear this? I don't know if it's apocryphal or not, but I heard in the show it's powerful. And Martin Luther King supposedly said, "Now this is Black power."
Okay.
He said, "Now this is Black power." I said, man, like I said, I wanted to tell people a story about Chicago. It was something. These are the people. These are the and you know, he is a mentor of titans, S.B. Fuller.
Right.
The men and women that he mentored are titans. You know, the Johnsons, the unrelated Johnsons. I joke sometimes. Well, anyway, I'm not even gonna put that joke out there. Anyway, but the John, the George and John, Dudley, down there with Dudley Products, Dudley's Q. It goes on, and countless people you've never heard of, You know, so this is who he was, but the issue, the reason he has faded, no question, is it was his politics and things of that nature.
Yeah, I understand that he was a Republican and he maintained himself being a Republican as blacks turned Democrats, but that saddens me too, because it sounds like we were willing to take down everything we had over trying to please some non-black person.
Come on. Come on, stop it. And I've told people this. And listen, in 2004, like I said, this is a long road to no lie. It's not just about, hey, I told people in film, full disclosure, this movie ain't about your health. But no, I've told
that's
them that. But if you want to,
well, that's it.
Full disclosure. This ain't about your hair.
That's a good point.
But you enjoy it for whatever you want to enjoy it for. This is a long story, and it's been through hoops. My first, because since we've gone there with S.B. Fuller, see, my first documentary that I wanted to do was called The Lynching of Herman Cain.
Okay.
See, because our politics had gotten to the point where we're throwing away, hey, man, black folks who have done a whole lot for us. Black folks who have really contributed where the tire meets the road. I had launched a short-lived magazine, Wayne, called Nuance. And I called it Nuance for that because we lacked it, I felt, as a community. And this is 2004, 2003. And one of the interviews in there was a young man who was an adjunct professor at Temple named Mark Lamont Hill, and he and I were debating. I remember like it was yesterday. We were debating Bill Cosby's, I don't know if it was the pound cake speech or not, but it was the 2004 Bill Cosby attack that landed, I would tell people, that landed him in jail.
Okay.
Oh, you know when Bill told him, pull your pants up, stop naming your daughter LaQuanda and LaKeisha. You remember all that? You know. And we were having a discussion, and I was like, what was interesting, Bill Cosby had not said anything that he had not been saying for 30 years. But the community and the public had changed.
Yeah, Bill Cosby has made such a tremendous impact on every single thing that we do that I can't hang him over an issue.
It's tough, especially when you got the Lord of the Rings out there. You like the Lord of the Rings. I love Lord of the Rings. You wouldn't have Lord of the Rings without Harvey Weinstein.
Okay. Oops. Okay.
Take it down.
I hear you. But let me add one other piece here, because Tyrone will be on soon. One, Tyrone and I did talk off, and one difference we had is that I figured that there's a highway, for instance, going from the south side of Chicago, or is in the south side of Chicago, and they named it after a Cogent minister. And I said, well, to me, it should have been named after S.B. Fuller. Because if it's going to be named after anybody, it shows, by naming after a religious person, it shows where our values are. And our values
it shows where our safety, yeah.
It's not
it's
on
a safety valve.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, go ahead. I'm sorry. I mean to interrupt. Go ahead. I'm listening.
That it shows what we value. Period.
Mm-hmm. But Wayne, I wouldn't say, like I said, No Lie was written in an apocalyptic way. The Bible, especially the latter half, Revelations, is written in apocalyptic language. That's why there's so much allegory. Romans is written in apocalyptic language because they were living under impression. You couldn't just say anything. You had to say it almost in code. And that's where we are. And we're in a situation right now as a community. And that's why I brought up in No Lie. I don't know where we are right now. We're in a time of self-reflection. We're at a crossroads. And things right here about what we believe. Like I said, when you say that where their values are, I will not say that that is where the values of the people of Chicago are. That might be where the values of the power structure of Chicago is.
Okay, I can agree with that. But one thing I say that I had a slight disagreement with you on, and I don't know how slight it is, mm-hmm. but in the film, you reported that the American Health and Beauty AIDS Association was created in response to the need of Black-owned, Black-haired product giants to gather and flex economic power by lobbying Congress for sensitive policies. But I also remember them as a marketing arm. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't remember you mentioning them using it as a marketing tool as well.
I did, but only in the context that it was already part of the overall last ditch effort at the, you know, by the time A Hobby had come through, the die was cast. The die was pretty much cast. And it was almost the marketing efforts that they were doing were blended in with the overall last-ditch buy black efforts of Johnson and everything like that.
That's true.
So
It was already,
and I try to show in the film that it was over. It was already too late for that. One of the things I wanted to touch on with A Hobby was, you're absolutely right. Because what they want you to do was to look for that symbol of the Proud Lady before you bought it.
I remember doing that.
Mm-hmm. That's what you're supposed to have done. Right. Go ahead, I'm listening.
And to catch up our listeners, if they don't remember or they looking at the film later, there was a symbol of a lady with long braids, which I already have the issue with her having long braids, but a lady with long braids, she was on the back or on the products of all these products made by Black-owned manufacturers of Black hair care products. And they did it because so many white companies were trying to squeeze them out, and eventually they did squeeze them out. So the point was to educate Black people that it was a difference to buy black, but also to give them a symbol in which to look for when they're in the store. And of course, it didn't work out. It didn't work out because most of the companies are no longer here.
Right. Right. I remember it, I used to think that for some reason, because I was so young, for some reason, I used to associate that symbol with Susan Taylor.
You know what? I did too.
Interesting side note. The first quote unquote celebrity I ever saw in flesh and blood, like walking on the street in my life.
Oh, really?
First celebrity ever. ever.
For Susan Taylor.
Susan Taylor. I was in New York City, and I was on a bus, and I saw her walk. I said, look, out of a crowd, I saw Susan. I said, my God, that's Susan Taylor. That's Susan Taylor. Yeah.
Hey, we won't tell the rest of the story, but we'll move on. Okay, what was also timely about learning of your film was that we just had done another article on a film that was released on the 1972 National Black Political Convention, and the movie is called Nation Time. And there were three issues at the political convention that the movie sort of addressed. And one was for blacks to get more political power in the Democratic Party, which I can say we've pretty much done that, because now instead of having 13 Congress people, we have over 60. Instead of having dreams of a black president, we got that. Instead of having dreams of a black vice president, we got that too. But there was also the idea of forming a separate political party, which is pretty much not here. And also developing an economic power base. In my assessment, the worst thing that didn't happen was the third one, developing the economic power base. And blacks still only 4% of all black businesses. That don't mean 4% of all large businesses, just 4% of all businesses. So in this sense, and knowing this, I did not expect your film to end with fireworks.
Right.
So what is your assessment of our economic standing? And when you were creating the film's ending, what was your options, and what went through your head on how to end this story?
Well, I had the ending. I finished the ending. I got halfway through the film, and then I went and did the ending. So I knew where my ending was. Really, it was how did I get there after a certain point. And for real, at a certain point, this is not what you asked, but you might find it interesting. I stopped working on the film. I got halfway through it and I was done. I didn't want to work. I didn't want to finish it. I didn't want to do it no more. I was frustrated. I was frustrated with black people, Wayne. And I said that I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do it. You know, whatever. I don't know what else to say. I just said it's the, you know, I don't know. Anyway, I wasn't going to finish the film. I was not going to finish this film. I was, and for whatever reason, something had happened watching the news. Well, you shouldn't watch the news too much. But, and then one day I had picked it up. It was just there, and I was on the treadmill here in the house, and I played 30 minutes of it, and I hadn't watched it in a couple of months. I had let it sit down, and it really just, it moved my heart. It moved my soul and everything like that. And I said, this is really a good little thing. I'm going to go on and finish it. And so I told, where do we go from here? I told the people in Portland, I said, listen, I think that what I show is a black girl getting a job. You know what I'm saying? I think, first of all, we need to focus on that. You know, we need to focus on make sure you have some income coming in some kind of way. You can't do nothing without no income coming in. And then we have to start, you know, got to figure out which way we want to go. Which way we want to go? There's a path that's laid by people in our community that's time tested, and those values have been vetted, and they have produced. And now we're at a crossroads where we want to go a different way, a different direction. So, but what I would say is that I think that we've gone back to being smaller. Like I said, I think we need to stop looking. Mr. Johnson says, I have him saying there, he never dreamed about a big corporation like the Johnson Publishing Company, but he was trying to sell one more copy of Negro Digest. Right now, we are in a situation where the tools are available for us to achieve more economic independence, more economic control of our communities. But what we don't need is one big boss man or boss lady. No more. We have to have more. We have to have smaller. Hell, this might be the way the country is going in general. I don't know. We might be states. I don't know if we're always going to be united. And I think that we need, you're right. I think we need smaller businesses. You run, like I said, you run in a small business. Run that business that you run and serve your community. Because here's why a lot of the what I hinted at and what happened with those large companies, Wayne, and I've told people this. What's important is not only black people can spend, if you working and you making money, you spend your money where you spend. I'm beyond the point of telling you that you have to spend your money with me because I'm black and you black. That's antiquated and it's gone. And you have the right, you have the God-given right to do whatever you want to with your money. Now, if you are so-called pro-black, if you are so adamant about these things that you say, then it would behoove you to invest your money, spend your money with those organizations or individuals who share your values. If you do not, I don't know what you call that, but I'm beyond the point of saying that you, I'm beyond the point of saying that you have to. Now, the other point as far as the business.
Let me slow this up and get Tyrone in here.
Okay.
Go ahead and finish your thought, then let me get Tyrone in here. Go ahead.
Okay, but what I would say is, now for the business provider, it has to do with the spirit in which we are rendering the service, which runs off black customers to non-black businesses.
Okay. So we're going to take a five-second break, and we're going to bring Tyrone Haymore into the conversation. Okay, welcome back to Porter Harlem Talk Radio. Join us now is Tyrone Haymore. Tyrone, are you there?
Yes, I am, Wayne. How are you?
Pretty good. We're gonna start off with you because we've talked to Bear. I know you heard part of the conversation. And the reason why we're bringing you in is because just 2 weeks ago, or maybe 3 weeks ago now, you and I talked about S.B. Fuller. And you brought me up to speed of who this man was. And I admit that he had faded out of my memory, like Bear had mentioned earlier about Mr. Pace. So tell me, what do you think about S.B. Fuller and how Bear Mack at least put him back, or and how you feel about Bear Mack at least documenting him into this story?
Okay. What's the name? You're saying Bear Mack?
Bear.
Yeah, it's like aspirin. Like aspirin. Yeah, not like the girl. No.
Okay. I did not hear that. Was that part of your earlier discussion?
Yeah, the main thing in the film, he talks about
what film? I don't know what film you're talking about.
In this film, No Lie, an American Beauty story. He talks about the rise and the fall of the black hair care industry, and so he talks about many people, and oftentimes, as we talked, you know, 3 weeks earlier, S.B. Fuller is often not mentioned, or he's forgotten. But in this film, he mentions him three times, and he mentions the impact he had on the industry. So I just want to get your take on his impact on the black hair care industry.
Okay. You want me to give you what now again? I'm sorry.
Your feelings on his impact on the black hair care industry.
Did you say my film?
Your feelings about S.B. Fuller's impact on the black hair
industry. I'm not hearing all these words correctly. I don't know if there's a phone connection or what. Okay, my feeling on you said there was an organization that the rise and fall of the black beauty industry, when did that take place?
Okay, it's a movie that's out now.
It's out now.
Right.
Okay. Is that by the gentleman that you're speaking with right now?
Exactly.
Okay. He's the film producer?
Exactly.
Okay. Let me have your name because I didn't get your name. I've been listening to you guys for a little while, but I never heard his name mentioned.
It's Bear.
Yeah, it's Bear.
Mm-hmm. We only have a few more minutes. What are your thoughts on him? What do you think about his impact on the haircare industry?
Well, Mr. Fuller didn't really get into the haircare industry until I believe somewhere in the let's see, he built a home in 58. So it must have been in the 40s somewhere that he started into the film, into the Harris business agency. Yeah. You know, we have a book on it, but I'm not looking at the book right now. I have it here, but I'm trying to get up to speed on what you're trying to relate here. But anyway, I think it was somewhere in the 40s. But I think I told you the last time we had a meeting that I was wanting to know if Annie Malone and Madam C.J. Walker had an impact on Fuller. And I asked his oldest daughter, Mary Fuller, about that. And she seemed to be a little surprised that I even knew Annie Malone or knew about her. And she said that they were not an influence on Fuller. But I don't believe that. I believe Annie Malone because they were before Fuller. Annie Malone right. and Madam Walker both had an influence on S.B. Fuller getting into that business. And it's just like the Aviators, Robinson and Coffey. When Bessie Coleman became the first black woman to fly an airplane, Coffey told me personally, I knew Coffey. He said, if a black woman can fly an airplane, don't you think a black man ought to be able to fly an airplane? So I'm saying the same thing about the beauty industry. If black women can be successful in the beauty cause, don't you think a black man could? That black man that I know was S.B. Fuller, who I knew personally.
Okay. So you said that these women did have an impact on him, and he didn't get involved until the 40s. So you have any comment about that, Bayer?
I think it's unquestionable that they were, because they had the proof in the pudding. He was interested in making money, and they had made money.
That makes sense.
I mean, I think that's just, it's just, and absolutely, and I get a lot of this out of Mary Casey's book about her father and stuff like this, and things like that, especially the photos and stuff about at the Conrad Hilton. No, I totally agree. I think it's impossible for him not to have been, even subconsciously, motivated by them, because they were famous for, they were known for being making money in the beauty industry.
Okay. And Tyrone, do you want to add anything else about S.B. Fuller and his impact on economics, black economics in particular?
I'm sorry, you're talking to me, Wayne?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, well, you mentioned earlier, I think I heard you mention something about S.B. Fuller and the bus boycott in Alabama.
Yeah, Bear mentioned that.
Right, right. And that's true what you said. That did happen. And you mentioned something about the Pentecostal preacher that was Bishop Ford Expressway, and you want to know why it wasn't named S.B. Fuller. I think I talked to you about that, but I don't know. I had nothing to do with it, to be honest, nothing at all. It was already done when I first heard about it, that it was named after the Bishop Ford. But I told you, I think that I didn't have a problem with it personally. Bishop Ford was quite a historic character, not only in his business in the ministry and being the bishop over the largest black religious organization in the world, over 9 million members. He has a lot of other historical background a lot of people are not aware of in civil rights movement, as well as in some black development in Chicago. So I think it's a worthy thing to have that expressway named after him, as opposed to Fuller. Fuller was strictly a businessman, and he was also making money, and I told you he helped the Johnson Publication Company survive as well. He played a major role in the Johnson Publication Company when their plant caught on fire and was practically destroyed. Fuller stepped in and helped them to rebuild it.
Right. You want to add anything to add to Bayer? before we get back to talking about what's next with your film, with your films and your documentaries?
No, he's absolutely. I wish I didn't get, because like I said, I was trying to squeeze. I got a lot in, but I didn't get that tidbit in. And it's not a tidbit. It's huge. George Johnson, at a pivotal moment, a crucial point in the development of the Johnson Product Company, their facilities burnt to the ground. And Mr. Fuller, like I said, it's a, I was telling you about, I'm off this kick of saying that you got to buy black because I'm black. It's about walking the walk. Mr. Fuller walked the walk, not just talk the talk. You know what I'm saying? Your business done burnt down. And he, and at this point, Johnson is basically about to be his competitor.
Okay.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? Dig that. I mean, so I'm saying it's where the tide meets the road, man. Where the tide meets the road. No, brother. Him. You can use my facility. Dig that. Dig that.
Yeah.
Where the tide meets the road. And I left that out, but no, that's a powerful, it's a powerful thing. And that's one of my regrets is I didn't get that in there, but I couldn't get everything.
Well, you can't get everything in there. And I'll tell you, I enjoyed that particular film. And so what's next? I know you had Oscar Micheaux, I think you said you did beforhand. And that we'll look at soon. And
yes,
so when,
well,
when
Oscar Micheaux was, yep. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
So when did you do Oscar Micheaux? You did this one that we talked about now in 2019, the one about the American Beauty
Oscar
industry.
Micheaux. That 2014 is when I did that. It just screened at the there in Washington. You guys are in Washington, right? I got kind of confused, but
I'm in Washington.
There in Washington at.
Okay, yeah.
But you're in Chicago, ahead. And he's in Washington. Okay, I got you. But
you're in Louisville.
It screened in. Yeah, I'm in Louisville, right? So here we go. But we. But you know, Mr. But quick side note, another guy, John Johnson owned WLOU down here. He owned WLOU.
I remember that.
Mm-hmm. And you know that there's a defender here, the Louisville defender, since stacking them open that downhill. You know that, right? But they don't own it anymore. But yeah, that. But no, Louisville was somewhat of a black city. But the Oscar Micheaux played there at the March on Washington, the recent March on Washington Film Festival and stuff like that. The film that I am working on right now, I think I sent it to you, it's called Black Seeds, The History of Africans in America, which takes a alternate, that's going to be a two-part documentary. Not something that I ever wanted to do. I said I would never make a slave narrative. I would never do that, but I would, and I've told people, it's been the single most invigorating blessed experience that I had, but it's not something I ever wanted to do. None, something I would never do. So, but right now I'm working on that, and I'm working on something, a little something in the line of kind of like No Lie, but a little short thing called The Last Black Action Hero.
Okay. So we look forward to talking to both of you all more. So Bear, I do promise to look at the films in time at the other ones, and hopefully we do more stories on it.
For sure.
I'd
be interested in getting your feedback on it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love this one. And we have 90 seconds left. And so, Tyrone, we look forward to also hearing more about your fundraising to make S.B. Fuller's former mansion your museum headquarters. And we look forward to our listeners going to portofhome.net and signing up for the magazine. It's free. It comes to you every other week on Thursdays. And also by liking us on Facebook and following us on Instagram. It gives us the power for us to do what we're doing today. So, Bear, do you want to leave us with the last words? You got 60 seconds.
Everybody go out and see the film. Enjoy your turkey. Enjoy your family from a safe, responsible distance.
Okay. All right.
Is the film available on Netflix?
Not on Netflix, sir, but it is available on DVD, and it is also available for streaming, and I'd be happy to, Wayne, I can, if you get the email from him, I'll, you know, hook him up so he can check it out at his leisure.
Okay, and for everyone else, you go to portofhome.net and click on No Lie and American Beauty Story, and there's a link right there, and the link will stay there from now until. So just Google it, Google portofhome.net, or just Google American No Lie. Or go to portofhome.net and Google No Lie and American Beauty Story, and the link will be for there. I think it's $4.99 If you watch it online,
stream.
You can buy the CD. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Take care now.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
All right. Thank you. Have a good evening.
All right. You too. Thanks.